BBC Radio Oxford. A very good afternoon. Now, let me tell you what's coming up next. I'm going to be joined by history expert Liz Woolley. She's the author of Oxford's Working Past. She's co-written a book on the Spanish Civil War as well. Anyway, today she'll be talking about uncovering the stories of the 66 men named on a memorial in St Matthew's Church who died defending our country in the First World War. BBC Radio Oxford, a very good afternoon. Now, in St Matthew's Church, have you been there? It's in the Grand Pont area in the south of Oxford. There are 66 names on a memorial. These names belong to the 66 men who, from 1914 to 1918, left the city. They left their families, they left their friends to go and fight, defend our country, and eventually die for our country in the First World War. Now, in 2015, as St Matthew's celebrates its 125th anniversary, historian Liz Woolley is uncovering those stories behind the 66 named men in her latest project. And Anne Kilty is one of the researchers on the project. And both ladies join me now this afternoon. Welcome to the show. Lovely to see you.
Lovely to see you, Kat. Thanks.
I mean, this is possibly a slightly sort of different project for you. I mean, of course, we know you as the author of Oxford's Working Past. Your recent project, you co-wrote a very thick book on the Spanish Civil War as well. But history's about stories, and we'll hear very shortly about all those stories that you have uncovered. But why this memorial? Why did it grab your attention, Liz?
Well, partly because I happen to live directly opposite the church, so it's really, really local for me, and that's what I like.
Okay, so why has it taken so long for you?
Don't ask me that. But it's also true to say that I met a wonderful man called Jim Tallett, who's uncle is named on the war memorial that you've just described. And his uncle and his father both went to fight in World War One. His father survived. And Jim has got some information about both those brothers. And I met him one day and he was talking to me about the war memorial and really sort of inspired me with this idea that somebody ought to do some research into, as you say, these 66 men.
For anybody that hasn't been there and actually seen the memorial, can you just describe it for us?
It's a brass plaque which is on the wall. It's got a rather nice frame around it with a sort of wooden coronet or crown on the top. And then the names are listed just very simply with the initial and the surname, which, of course, when you're dealing with someone who's called A. Smith, makes it quite difficult to find out who they are. And we have got a few of those. So it's a simple affair, as I think many of these war memorials were, but very moving to see the number of names in what is a relatively small parish. I mean, if you do the maths, it works out that something like 15% of young men from the parish died in the First World War. And if you think about the significance of that for that local community, it's quite sobering, isn't it? Mm.
So how do you get started? I mean, when you are presented with this memorial, but as you say, names like A. Smith on the memorial, where do you get started? Where's your first point of contact?
Okay, well, the first thing you do is you recruit a whole load of other people to help you.
Like Anne,
because 66 is too many to do on your own. So we've got a team of researchers who are local people who've really taken this job on with great enthusiasm, which is fantastic. And then there are various very useful sources. The Commonwealth War Graves Commission, of course, theoretically all the men who died and women who died in the First World War have a Commonwealth War Grave somewhere. The chances are it's in France or Flanders or wherever, but some of them are here in Botley Cemetery and in Osney Cemetery, and others are dotted all over the world. So the Commonwealth War Graves Commission has records of all these people, and that's a very good place to start finding them. And that gives you a little bit of information, sometimes their address and sometimes their age when they died and when they died and so forth.
This sounds like a very time-consuming thing, Anne, I have to say.
Yes, I mean, I'm responsible for 11 of the 66. I've been spending a number of weeks doing this so far. It's very much still a work in progress. I haven't got all the information on all the people so far. You can get quite a lot of basic information very quickly from the Commonwealth War Graves and also the census information and births, marriages and deaths. But when you're trying to get more detailed information on people, it can take a bit longer. Mm. And also the big problem was that a lot of people's forces records were destroyed in various fires and things. So I've only got two records of my 11, which give a lot of detail. And actually, they're fascinating when you can get hold of the proper forces records. They're really interesting.
It must be the greatest payoff than ever when you actually get the person, it all pieces together. And then we'll talk about some of the photographs that you've got in front of you as well. You know, when that name becomes a real person, it must be quite an incredible feeling.
Well, the most exciting one for me was a chap who didn't actually seem to have anything to do with Grand Pont or Oxford. Indeed, Frederick Pullen, who was in the the Royal Flying Corps. And it turned out that what got me very excited about that is I had a photo because everybody that passed their flying exam in the Royal Flying Corps got a very beautiful portrait photo taken of them, and there's a whole log of them. But he also was in the Oxford Journal, the Illustrated Journal, having pulled somebody out the river in Grand Pont in 1917. And it was exactly the same person in that photograph. And that was, for me, the most exciting bit of the project when I went to the library and found this photo from the OGI, and it was exactly the same man. So that was very exciting.
Mm. It's a bit like being a private detective tracking these people down. It's very exciting, as Anne says. Yes, I've got him. Whoa, you thought you could escape me, but you were wrong.
but why was it so important to you? I mean, despite the fact that you live in very close proximity to St. Matthew's Church, why is it so important to you, Liz, to uncover this and almost bring the stories and these people that died in the First World War to life?
I think it's for a number of reasons. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of this kind of activity going on at the moment with the centenary of the First World War. So it's something that's going on in other parishes in Oxford and all over the country. So it feels good to be participating in that sort of nationwide acknowledgement of the centenary of the First World War. But I think also on a local level, it really brings history alive for local people. And that's one of the things, as you know, Kat, that I'm very interested in doing. And one of the things that we would like to do is, now that we're starting to identify exactly which houses on which streets these men lived in.
So finer details.
Yeah, exactly. Is to contact the people who actually live now in those houses and say, you know, someone who lived in your house in 1914, went to war and is on the war memorial, would you be prepared to have your house as part of a trail around the area that we want to set up in the summer? So say put a large poppy on the gate of the house in question with a laminated piece of information about the man with one of the photos that Anne has showed you before we started, and have a trail around the area so that people can actually walk around and just stand on the corner of the street and look around and maybe see 10 poppies on 10 gates and think, gosh, that's amazing. You know, in the course of 4 years, 10 young men died in the houses that I can just see from where I'm standing.
That's a lovely commemoration and personal memorial, actually, to all those young men that died. And fascinating, really, I suppose, to discover who may have inhabited your house years and years ago, because many people don't know about
that's
who
true.
Lived in their house.
Yeah, and actually the reason Anne was interested and I recruited her, because she and I have been in touch before, because you've done a lot of work on your house history, haven't you? And who lived in it. So that's why you were sort of already primed to be interested.
Because we do family history. Family history is something that really interests people, but we don't often think about our houses and who's lived in our houses before us. So a very, very interesting part of history. We'll talk about the appeals that you're making to the public in a few moments' time. My guests are local historian Liz Woolley and also Anne Kilty here, who's on Liz's research team for her current project. We'll talk more after this from Louis Armstrong. What a wonderful world. It's BBC Radio. BBC Radio Oxford. A very good afternoon. Now, I love a bit of history. And bringing it alive in the studio, as ever, is our local history expert. She's Liz Woolley. And also, she's brought along from her research team, Anne Kilty, as well. Now, we're talking about in St. Matthew's Church. I don't know whether you've seen the memorial, but in the Grand Pont area of south of Oxford, that's where it is, there are 66 names on a memorial. You may not have thought an awful lot of that, but these names belong to the 66 men who, from 1914 to 1918, left the city, they left their families, they left all of their friends, everything they knew. They left home to go and fight for our country, and they didn't come back. They died serving our country in the First World War. But Liz Woolley is getting to the bottom of who these men were, helped by her team, by Anne as well. You've been doing quite a few appeals to the public, haven't you, Anne, in trying to get to the nitty-gritty of who these young men were?
Yes, that's right. We had an article that was published in the Oxford Mail a few weeks ago, and we got a good response to the appeal, and Liz knows all the details of various people that have actually contacted her with lots of stories, and she's got some great stories to tell.
That's always what you want, isn't it, when you appeal to the public, but it's not always what you get, but it must be quite heartening and exciting when you get a good response from an appeal, Liz.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's also very moving, of course, because, you know, these are very, very personal stories, and we've got people who are the great-nephews, great-nieces, in some cases granddaughters of the people who these young men, as you say, who died. And in some cases, they've been able to give us a lot of information and shown us memorabilia and letters and so forth. In other cases, actually, we've been able to tell them some things about their relatives, which of course is wonderful, and that's what it should be. It should be an exchange of information, and
people a very emotional exchange.
It is, yeah, and people have been so generous in telling us about their stories. And one of the other things that we've started to realise is how connected these young men were, not just because they lived close to each other. In some cases, they did live next door to someone else who went, but through the relatives, we've realised that they were actually related in some cases by marriage or even by blood, as it were, which we wouldn't necessarily have realised if they, you know, they have a different surname. And Anne, for example, has found you've got two cousins, mm-hmm, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Who are both on the war memorial, and also an uncle and a nephew who are both named. Obviously, one of them was kind of at the older end of the people who went; the other one was very young. And we've also, for example, got three people called Little on the war memorial. It turns out they were three brothers. There were six brothers, and I think five of them went to fight, and only two of them came back. Mm. And, you know, when you hear that kind of thing, and particularly when you're talking to the living descendants of these people, it really brings it home to you.
Mm. What's the sort of the feeling from the relatives, the descendants of these people as well? Because obviously, you know, this is an incredibly sad thing to go to. I mean, losing three brothers for the family at the time when they went to fight for the First World War. Has the emotion been watered down? Do they understand the sacrifice fully that they made?
I think that the passage of time, isn't it? It's 100 years since this happened, and in many cases, apart from Jim, the chap who I mentioned right at the beginning, whose uncle went to fight. Obviously, he never met him, but he was a very close relative. And we've also been in contact with another man whose uncle is named on the war memorial, but. We're reaching the point now, aren't we, where nobody who fought in the First World War is still alive, and actually the next generation are beginning to leave us as well.
But it's really
so I think
important
there's
that
the passage
that
of time.
We totally understand.
Yeah.
And it's kept alive, the stories are kept alive, and of course this is why you're doing this. What about those stories? What about the people, the relatives, the descendants of the people on the memorial? You know, they've been quite forthright in giving you things, and I know off air you mentioned a letter from the trenches, which you brought with you.
Yes, I've brought this an extract from this letter, which a very kind woman called Annabel Panting sent to us, and she is actually related by marriage to two of the men on our war memorial, and this is something that, you know, we would never have known if she hadn't contacted us, so we're very grateful. And she sent us a huge amount of information about one of the men in particular, Arthur Dolly. And he wrote a letter to his much younger sister. His sister was 10 when she received this letter from him, which was written from the trenches, and Annabel has this letter, and she sent us a copy. Shall I just read this extract? So he's describing here what it's like to be in the trenches, and this is on the Somme. As soon as I can get out of these awful trenches, just outside the door of our dugout, it's up to two knees deep in soft, sticky mud, and besides all, it's wet and the sides are falling in. How would you like to live in a house like this? I can't stand up, so we have to lie down all the time. I can't stand up, so we have to lie down all the time, as it's too wet to sit down. My bottom is very sore through sitting for so long. I've got to sit on it all night and all day tomorrow and the next night. Don't tell Mother, though. She'd be shocked to think of what I've told you, and she might smack me. So he wrote that, and that was in amongst a whole load of other things, telling his little sister about, you know, talking very sweetly about her life and what she was doing. And this letter is dated 4 days before he died in a trench collapse. I'm going to cry now. When you read things like that, it's really moving, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're going to take some travel right now, so you can gather your thoughts. Let us all gather our thoughts, in fact, because those appalling conditions, we can't even begin to imagine and understand, because those young men, of course, were fighting to save us and to defend our country, and in those appalling conditions. But we'll talk more about those stories that have come out that you've found after some update on the A34 southbound. BBC Radio Oxford, a very good afternoon. We're talking history this afternoon with my guests, Liz Woolley and Anne Kilty as well. We're talking about the memorial in St Matthew's Church. I don't know whether you've seen it before. It's in the Grand Pont area in the south of Oxford. There's 66 names on a bronze memorial. It's very, very simple, Those 66 names belong to men who lost their lives in the First World War. Now, Liz, who lives within close proximity to St. Matthew's Church, and of course being a local historian as well, has taken it upon herself to recruit a team of researchers, plus herself, to understand who these men were. And bring all this alive. And I suppose this is a sort of a personal commemoration, isn't it, too? I mean, given the year, given the 100 years since the First World War, it's a wonderful way of remembering these particular men and bringing them alive as well. We were talking about just earlier, actually, before the song. You read a letter, an excerpt from a letter that one of the young men who died in the First World War had sent to his 10-year-old sister, describing the appalling conditions in the trenches and the fact that, you know, he couldn't stand up, they were wet, he had to lie down. 4 days after he'd written this letter, he was actually killed. We're talking about, of course, the 66 men that were killed, but there was a lot of men that came back that, of course, had to deal with the atrocities, with the conditions, with the things that they'd seen when they returned to their home of Oxford.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's one of the things that's really come home to us, hasn't it, Anne, when we've been doing this research. Obviously, our initial focus has been on the 66 men, as you've said. But, of course, what we're finding is that all of them, more or less, most of them had brothers who went to fight as well and who experienced equally awful conditions and experiences, but came back and then had to live with that for the rest of their lives, and had to live with the fact that they'd lost their brother or whoever it was. And also, I think there was this thing, wasn't there, of feeling guilty about the fact that you had survived. I think that was quite a common thing.
There's a lot of help now, much more so for war veterans.
Well, of course,
but back then there was probably none.
Yeah, and a lot of the relatives that we've spoken to have said, oh, he just never talked about it. In some cases, that wasn't true. They did talk about it, but a lot of men just never discussed it, never talked about it. And so if you think about, again, the effect on a relatively small community like Grandpont of having, you know, from 1918 onwards, all these young men back at home trying to get back to work and re-establish lives with wives who they hadn't really seen much of for the previous 3 or 4 years. You know, the effects of that on a relatively small community are very, you know, sobering, aren't they? It's very hard for us to imagine what it would be like on that scale.
Now, in your research, you've got sort of quite far down the line with some of the names and some of the gentlemen that died in the First World War, and you've brought in some pictures as well. I mean, the initial thing that strikes me is that they are all so young.
Yeah, they're also very good-looking chaps, aren't they, all of them?
Incredibly handsome in their uniforms, they really are. A credit to their country, in fact. That must be quite an incredible experience for you when you're researching these people, and then when you actually kind of everything ties up, all the information, and then a picture comes out of it, and you can actually see the person, the man behind the name, as it were.
Yes, that was a great experience. I went down to the local library in Oxford. You can go through all the microfilms from the Oxford Illustrated Journal, because there's a database to tell you where the pictures are, and you flick through, and then you come across your chap. It's a great experience to actually see the photos.
There must be many challenges as well.
Yeah, there has been a few issues, actually. There's been one where they had the wrong initials on the memorial. So instead of AJ Rennie, they had WJ Rennie, which in fact was his father, who died around the same time. So somebody must have made a bit of a disconnect. So that took a while to disentangle that, because there were a number of Rennies. It took me a while to work out which one was mine. And then there's been other issues in terms of the fact there's one I can't actually find his name from the Commonwealth War Graves. So a guy called Reginald Vivian Robinson, and there are so many Robinsons, and unfortunately they didn't put him in as RV, and I'm struggling to find him and trying to drill down to the possible regiments, and that's taking a little bit of detective work to try and get there, but hopefully I might be able to in the end.
So how long do you think this is going to take you now, Liz? I mean, when are you going to be finished?
Never.
How long is this string?
Well, we do have a number of deadlines. The church, as you mentioned, is celebrating its 125th anniversary, and the sort of focus of that celebration, although it's going on all year, is going to be in June the 21st. So what we're aiming to do is to have an exhibition in the church initially in June about the project, and giving as much information as we can about these 66 men, and also, as I mentioned earlier, doing this trail around the area in June in the summer months. The other thing that we're hoping to do, and we're just getting going with this, is to make a short documentary film about the men and about how we've gone about the project, and that's very exciting. And we've got Simon Haynes, who's a local filmmaker, is starting out on that. And although we're being realistic and we won't have that done by June, but what we're aiming for is to have that done by November, when the Armistice Day celebrations or commemorations will be on. So that's another kind of deadline, if you like, later in the year, to have this documentary film, which we aim to show all lots and lots of different places, local schools, local community centres, local retirement homes, and hopefully, you know, maybe even at cinema screenings and perhaps in colleges and that kind of thing. So just to sort of spread the word as much as possible.
And what about all the information then? Will it be archived? Will it go to a local archivist?
So all the information is being gathered on a wonderful website. And if anyone would like to just Google 66 Men of Grampont, the number 66 Men of Grampont, you'll find it. And as Anne said, it's very much a work in progress. So on there, more or less every day, we're putting up new information as we find it about these 66 men. So if any of your listeners are interested, please do have a look. And the contact for me is prominently displayed on that website. So do get in touch if you've got anything else to add or you've got any questions. We'd be really happy to hear from people.
You need people.
We do.
You need people to come forward with their stories.
We do. Yeah, that would be great.
Well, it's been wonderful having you both here. Thank you very much. Good luck with it all.
Thank you, Kat.
Good luck with it all. And come back and, you know, when you've got all the information collated, and come back. And
we will.
Because, of course, so many more stories are going to emerge from all this as well.
Perhaps you'd like to come and do an outside broadcast from our exhibition or our trail.
Nothing like putting me on the spot. Hey? Do you know, I'd love to.
So
I'll get my people to talk to your people. Thank you very much, Liz Woolley, and also Anne Kilty as well. It has been quite a challenge.